Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the New Media Show. Of course, my name is Todd Cochran, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Rob Greenlee. Good morning, Rob. How are you?
Good morning, Todd. It's great to be here again, talking new media. It's always an interesting space to extrapolate and expand and do what we do here and try and be funny a little bit. Sometimes it kind of happens toward the end of the show, usually. So if you're watching this and you think maybe we're a little too serious, you might just wait till the end because stuff all just breaks out at that point.
Yeah, it definitely did last week. Broke out so much, I wonder if we lost our originally scheduled guest. But we're, at 4:55 this morning, a.m., when my alarm clock went off, I rolled on. I said, oh, just forget that thing for day. And today I'm like, I can't go back to bed. So it was one of those mornings that's a little tough rolling out. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, we have a well-known podcaster and guest with us, Ewan Spence. Good morning, Ewan. And, you know, I think as soon as you speak, people are going to figure out where the hell you're at. So good afternoon.
Good day. No.
Good day.
Yeah. I get to do my traditional welcome. It's good morning to Todd. It's good afternoon to Robin. It's good evening to everybody else here in Scotland.
That's right. Yeah.
So, where in Scotland exactly are you?
I'm in Edinburgh, our capital city. You would not be surprised to hear it is slightly overcast, slightly damp and drizzly. Clichés are wonderful, but generally they're clichés because they're true. And it's been a week after a very busy week over here. So there we go.
Well, I tell you, I've it's been I don't even know how many years, but
it's going to be late 04, early 05.
When I was in the Navy, I came out to basically I was in Edinburgh. I actually came out to the RAF air base out there, and boy, I tell you, it was fantastic. I actually was there when the weather was beautiful, and there was like three or four things I remember about Scotland. Number one, I met for the first time someone with my same last name. Number two, I almost got broadsided by a taxi cab because I was the driver in a rental car. Went to Andrews. We didn't play golf, but we visited the gift shop, and I had a great time pub, just, you know, drinking way too much beer. But I had a
When you're in Scotland, there is no definition for way too much.
That's probably true. But I had a great time, and I hope to go back someday. And no, I don't play golf, so I didn't really miss anything not playing that day. And it was actually, wind was blowing like crazy, and the folks were out there playing golf. I said, you guys are nuts. And I'm glad you love your sport. But beautiful country, absolutely beautiful, and had a great time. So that being said, what's new in the land of podcasting in Scotland, or overall in the whole space, and what you been up to?
Well, what I've been up to, let's start there with the one. Sure. I'm actually just back from Copenhagen for the last 2 weeks for a little soiree which we call the Eurovision Song Contest over here in Europe. For the American audience who don't know what that program is, it's an international live program which involves all the major broadcasters in Europe. I'm putting on a live concert. Every country gets to send 1 3-minute song. They all sing it live, and then all of Europe does a phone vote, like American Idol, to choose the best song. And the winning song gets to host it next year. That is, there's the concept. What do you think the TV viewership on that's going to be?
Oh, gosh, I have no idea. A million.
Bit higher. Rob?
I'd say 5 to 10.
So the viewership figures for this year's show, unaudited, so we're still waiting final confirmation, is 195 million TV viewers. Wow. Across Europe.
Wow. Oh, it's across Europe. I didn't realize it was that widely distributed.
Yes. Wow. And it's been running every year since 1956.
Wow.
So
amazing.
So what was your, did you just go to a 10, or were you involved
in? No, I actually run one of the leading podcasts that talks about the song contest, and have done for about 6 years now on that one. Also been out there helping the national broadcasters. Eurovision is wonderful because it's been used as a test bed of technology throughout its history. Back in 1956, it was one of the first live microwave transmission networks. So it could carry the picture to, at that point, 12 countries as a live show across Europe. Now, of course, they use point-to-point internet streaming. Broadcasters use it. The BBC has just used it to test up a pop-up digital radio station. It's a radio station that literally lived for 48 hours only, like a little mayfly. Oh. The Radio 2, the BBC switched it on, they broadcast that for 4 days, and then they shut it all down again.
Huh.
I tried getting a license for that in the United States.
Yeah.
There's some nice things. One of the advantages of the UK industry is we have a thing called the Restricted Service License for radio broadcasts.
Right.
And it allows anybody to apply for 50 watts for 3 weeks. In any stations, you can actually apply for them off your own back or as an event organizer or as a national broadcaster. In this case, though, they were running it completely digitally, so it's running as a podcast service, as an on-demand service online, and over digital radio as well. So it's continuing to push new boundaries, and I've been giving them a help out with some of the production and interview side of that thing to go alongside the indie production that I do in the regular podcasting.
Very cool.
So I've heard that the BBC is maybe potentially looking to expand beyond the confines of their market that they try and target more, like reaching out to like the U.S. and places like that, and that there's some licensing issues that they have to do, but they also need to create some revenue from that in order to break that content out. Is that accurate from what you're seeing, that there's an opportunity for a lot of content to move?
The BBC has a separate service called BBC World, the BBC World. Yeah. And they will do the licensing of the program. So something, for example, like BBC America, it's actually a Turner channel. They license the BBC brand, they buy in the BBC programming to go on there, as you would any other station in the US. The online component, of course, there's always – the BBC is one of the forefronts of people that deliver on-demand television in the UK, I think. Recent reports is something like 25% of bandwidth in the UK is people watching the BBC catch-up service, which is free to use in the UK. It's not $10 a month Hulu or Netflix deal. It's if you're online in the UK, you get the BBC iPod and you watch any program that's played over the last 7 days on demand. In terms of requests on that one, they're generally serving a peak of around about 650,000 viewers per program at peak time in the evening. So about 9 p.m. in the evening, they will be delivering something like 700,000 live video streams on an average night.
Wow.
And so, of course, if you're outside of the UK, the techies know to set up dark internet magic. So they think that you're in the UK and you can watch it online. But there's always been this demand for, we would like to watch the BBC outside of the UK. You then come up against all traditional licensing. We've licensed music for this program in the UK territory for 2 plates. Same sort of deal you have in America. You'll be licensing music for domestic in Canada, 2 plates for your theme tune. So that, in terms of the licensing world, that's their main issue, which is, how do we license this worldwide in a cost-effective manner? Because the BBC's remit is to serve the United Kingdom. It's not to serve the world. But that said, they are investigating it. They do have BBC World. And in terms of something like iTunes, a number of BBC programs and releases on DVD have appeared on iTunes within 48 hours of broadcast, and some of them even sooner. I think the one that springs to mind is they recently found old episodes of Doctor Who. Because many, many years ago, they deleted the videotapes because who's going to want to watch them again anyway? It's like 1971 and videotapes are quite expensive. Todd will remember. And then they found the tapes again in an old tape reel in the back of an office in the top of the shelf in Namibia or somewhere like that. And they announced it at 10 p.m. on one evening. And 2 hours later, those episodes were available on iTunes.
Wow.
Worldwide. Worldwide. So they went, we found these new episodes. We're going to put them out on DVD in a month, but if you really want to buy them now, wherever you were in the world, but basically that morning, these episodes were regarded as national treasures, missing, presumed white. And then that evening, people were downloading The Web of Fear, which is essentially Yetis invade the London Underground and the United Nations send an army in.
So was the... Go ahead. I lost my train of thought. So, no, I know what I was going to say. So in... You guys pay a compulsory license fee every year as a... Just for the basically...
We
the,
do, yes.
Yeah, and that's what... If I remember correctly, it's about £100 or... What is the...
It's like more than that. It's about 130, 140 now. Essentially, you pay to... You register any wireless receiver that can pick up a television signal.
Okay. You know what would be... You know, I wish they would, you know, and I guess they're investigating, as you said, but, you know, would you pay, you know, a couple hundred bucks a year for all of the BBC programming?
You mean outside of the U.S.?
Yeah, yeah.
Would
you pay for it digitally or, you know, to get it digitally?
Well, I think what I'm hearing is that they're exploring making sure that they get, you know, advertising opportunities in that content as a way of paying for it. Because I entirely agree. What the issue is that they don't want to release that content outside of the U.S. because or outside of the U.K. because the U.K. Population is paying for that, right? And so there needs to be a way to monetize it outside of the U.S. to justify that.
But what if I said I'll pay the same amount of money that UN spends?
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's probably
a legislative
not.
Thing, I would think. With the
well, and I don't think that a lot of people would pay for that.
Oh,
I mean, at this point, I don't. I mean, just because there's so many other choices here in the U.S. for content, you know.
Right.
I think it's a great question. You know, I know that the iPlayer has been a very, very compelling platform for many, many years that most Americans haven't really had access to or been exposed to. It's been a leading service for video for a long time, and it's just, you know, it's really, really powerful, and I'm sure our guests can kind of expand on that too, because, you know, I've never actually seen it. I know a lot of people here in the U.S. will spoof a proxy to get access to it, and have been doing that for years, but I'm pretty sure that they've gotten pretty savvy to that kind of stuff too.
Do they crack down on the expats spoofing to, you know, pretend like they are in the UK, or do they have they been aggressive?
To be honest,
with that?
I think they just accept that the 5% of people that understand how to set up proxies and use proxies, there's no point fighting them. They will always find a way.
Gotcha.
You know, as long as the casual surfer is stopped, I think they're happy with that.
Hmm.
Obviously, if you ask them officially, it's the we only want UK. We don't encourage that. But the simple way of how the internet works,
right,
it's kind of hard to detect who's using a proxy and who's actually in the United Kingdom.
Right.
So I think it's just the case of they're making it hard, but they're not going that extra mile at the very end because it is the public's money that they're spending, and they would far rather spend that money on, for example, doing an arts program and putting it into concerts like the Proms concerts, which provides TV and radio, which isn't necessarily mainstream and wouldn't be attractive to an advertiser, but as a public service, it's something that is vital to the culture of the United Kingdom.
One thing when Rob had sent me your link to your article in Forbes, and by the way, congratulations, I didn't know you're writing for Forbes, so it's nice.
Yeah, I've been surfing there for about 2 or 3 years, so yeah.
So
yeah, that's great.
Yeah. That's been a fun thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So you wrote an article, it came out a couple of days ago, actually 2 days ago, talk about more people are listening to more radio online every day. Let's talk a little bit about your article here and some of the numbers that you revealed in this piece.
I mean, this is where it gets interesting because it actually ties back to the numbers. I mean, Todd, you know yourself, video is more attractive than straight audio in terms of things like advertising.
Right.
But in terms of listeners and adoption, audio is still a huge player. I think there was something like, you know, a year after podcasting had become an actual word. So, you know, if we're talking late 2005 here, 8 out of 10 people in the United Kingdom had downloaded a podcast. And that's mostly because when it's mentioned on your national broadcaster, you can now listen to the show again as a podcast. There was this huge what is this podcasting thing. So while America had to kind of wait for iTunes to kick off and do the whole podcast promotion, the BBC were very involved at the start as well, as much as they could with their charter. And the iPlayer is a sort of spin-off. You had the iPlayer for audio and you have iPlayer for radio now, and you have separate podcasts available in there. But it's very interesting when you sort of look at the adoption curve of when people listen to audio and when people consume video. Radio is very much a morning thing in the UK. You know, the peak is about 7:15 in the morning, and then it tails off all the way down to midnight. And then it slowly climbs up again. But radio online, i.e. through the BBC's iPlayer, or listening live on the website and streaming through there, stays relatively constant to about, you know, it builds up from 7, it peaks at about 8 o'clock, and it stays at that level till about 5:30. So throughout the day, mostly for the people who are connected and working, online radio actually outpaces broadcast radio in terms of adoption curves. More people still listen to over-the-air radio rather than digital radio, but when you're looking at the relative curves, internet radio is there throughout the day for people, as opposed to broadcast radio, which is switched on for breakfast and then kind of switch off as you go through the work for the day. If you've ever seen how people use the internet, there's that climb up to the working hour, the 9 to 5, and then the drop off. Online radio in the UK pretty much follows that same shape.
It makes sense, and I you know, you even see that with you know, hour by hour podcast consumption too. Is a big hit in the morning, and then you know, around 11 o'clock in the morning. Actually, what happens, what we see is, even though, and I agree with you, what your earlier statements say is audio is still king. Even though the advertisers like to buy the sexy video stuff, audio stays strong right up until about the 2 hour frame that people have lunch, and then video comes up, pikes, spikes, you know, and there's 10-15 minutes of, you can tell where people are having lunch and they're maybe watching something on YouTube or maybe one of the news channels. And then as soon as lunch is over, boom, they're right back into audio again. So, but it doesn't, audio doesn't necessarily drop off. It just, you know, there is spikes of video watching. And then, of course, what we see here is that at about the 5 o'clock hour, the video stuff really ramps up and the audio stuff ramps down, just because people are then home and the kids are watching stuff. And, you know, so it's all, you know, it follows the trends that, you know, if you think about our lifestyles, makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, I would imagine that the differences, Rob. Oh, I was just gonna throw a piece in there too, that I'm sure people are commuting between that 4 and 6 o'clock, so there's probably a spike in broadcast radio listening during that time, as well as kind of a podcasting during those commute times. I don't know, is that factored into this study? It seems like the study that you referred to was talking mainly about kind of broadcast and, you know, on the broadcast radio side and TV and stuff. But I did see, you know, the whole concept and term that I saw that I haven't seen before is listen again. And I thought it was, the term catch-up radio, which isn't a phrase that you hear said much here in the U.S., but I think it's an interesting term that probably should be said more here in the U.S. about this space. It's just a new term. What's your thoughts on catch-up radio and listen again?
Listen again has been consistently promoted over the last couple of years by the BBC. In terms of percentage of hours that people listen to, live radio still makes up about 97% of the hours consumed by the BBC radio. And the numbers I have here are for national radio from the BBC, not necessarily the independents. So again, 97% of radio is live radio. Now that could be over the air on AM, FM, that could be over digital, that could be streamed off the website. In terms of listen again service, about 1.5% of the cumulative hours is on listen again, and about 1.3% are listening on a downloadable podcast. So the catch-up services, as in when you're sitting at the computer, or the specific podcast services through RSS, they actually balance off about the same and take up about 3% of the total hours listened to in the UK. To put actual numbers on that, about 4.2 million adults in the UK, population in the UK is about 65 to 70 million, depending on how you count it. About 4.2 million adults will use the catch-up radio listen again service once a month.
Hey, Rob, you know, I think the thing that we need to make sure people understand is these are the radio numbers.
Yep.
You know, everything, you know, you look at this show or even my weekly show, you know, .0001% a watch live or listen live, and 99.9999% play it later or catch it up later or you know, download it later or stream it later. So
what's the difference between podcasting here and listen again? Is it just a streaming difference?
Podcasting again, is viewed as streaming.
Okay. So podcasting is considered to be just a download, and catch up and listening again is a streaming kind of experience. It's an on-demand streaming. Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And here it's becoming hard to differentiate between the two, because now most people that are consuming podcasts are not, I guess for a better word, downloading. Now there's a certain amount of it still going on. But
it's a progressive download playback, right?
Right.
So it's a little bit, it's kind of a hybrid experience between the two. And I think those two things kind of need to blend together as one.
Yeah, I think some people are still doing the full download and then listen later. But it's becoming a smaller portion of the whole, for sure.
Yeah,
I see it actually in, and I'm sure you guys are seeing this too, and your iTunes kind of charts, is that on the weekends, it's about half streaming and half downloading. And then during the week, it's like 2/3 downloading and 1/3 streaming. So for some reason, Monday through Friday, more people are downloading than streaming. But on the weekends, it's about 50-50. I think it's an interesting trend.
It's probably because they're home. They have a big fat pipe and they don't have an employer that is saying, why are you using the internet for, you know, for streaming audio? Because some companies don't allow it.
Yeah,
and that might
be. You also have the commute.
There's got to be some reason why.
You know, you download for the commute.
Yeah.
Oh, the commute too. You're right.
Yep.
But I find myself even on the commute just hitting play because my connectivity is good enough. I don't have to worry about downloading. But maybe that's not the case.
Right. And I think it's also, I think it's also the sophistication of the listener too. I think to understand what use cases for downloading versus just click and play. And I think as more of the kind of aggregator software client kind of experiences move more towards kind of just click and play favorites lists that don't automatically trigger a download, then I think we'll see those numbers shift. I mean, I think that future software deployments are going to give the option to download, but I don't believe that it's going to be the first option.
And that actually might be a good segue into a couple of things that happened this past week.
Yeah.
The folks over at Apple updated the iOS app, and they've added some features where you now can click links directly in the description, and they open in Safari. And there's some other features in there too, but they did definitely do a big rollout with the new podcast app. And so far, I'm not hearing a lot of people complaining about it. So it tells that they're still vesting in the space. But one of the bigger stories I saw was over on Digital Trends, and let me bring this up for you guys so you can see it. Talks about the hands-on CarPlay.
CarPlay, yeah.
So, you know, I was looking at this menu system and I don't know if this is just, if this is someone's Photoshop or not, but you've got phone, music, maps, messages, now playing, and, well, that's the Pioneer version. That's the Pioneer CarPlay. That's the one that's the third-party one you can buy for about $700 or $800 and then probably as much money to install it. But it, you know, definitely looks like an iPad on your dash.
Yeah.
So,
but it's not going to have access to all the apps that the iPad has access to.
Right.
They're going to keep that locked down just because there's just a lot of apps that just, it's not safe to have in the car. Yeah. Well,
and I'm sure it's just like anything else. They're probably going to go through a vetting process, and it's just like Ford does. And so, you know, and the variety of other players is that you got to really dumb down your menu system, because the same, you know, it's as you said, Rob, you don't want people fiddling around with the menu system at 65 miles an hour on the highway.
Yep. Yeah. So those apps are going to need to have special capabilities to turn off, you know, functionality as the vehicle is moving. So, you know, that's going to take some special APIs and things like that, that the app programmers are going to have to put in there.
Well, that's where voice commands will come into play. So what's your experience right now for personally, you and what are you doing when you're transitioning from the house to the car? Are you just turning the radio on, or are you connecting via Bluetooth? What's the trend you're seeing there? Is your use case unique, or?
It's probably more unique for me because I'm a mix of work from home and cycle,
right.
In which case headphones are off because cycling's not as safe as driving around in an armored tank with lots of metal around you. It's like, if I get hit, I'm going to get hit and I'm going down. So for me, it's still the classic podcast mold. It's still, you know, find the show, have them downloaded, ready to go, and have them sync through the desktop onto the iPhone. And also really to the Zune player. I know Rob's now going to get all misty-eyed and everything, but it's still, there he goes. It's still probably one of the finer podcast solutions. I know Apple have improved it recently, and I have to say the addition of adding podcasting support into CarPlay and also the addition of podcasting support into Siri creates a much better voice solution for people on the move. Yep. For me, you know, I'm still relatively Microsoft up in terms of mobile tech, and the podcasting stuff that comes through there is actually works to me once you jump through the hoops to tell it, no, really, I'm in America, not the United Kingdom. And then you have to remember to switch it off when you go to iPlayer and go, no, really, I'm not in the US, I'm in the United Kingdom.
Fun times.
But I, for me personally, what I see from people that I interact with is there's still more of a tend towards streaming. There's more a tend of just hit the play button on the website. And again, you're back to that sort of view of the web browser is your working environment that many people, you know, 5 or 10 years ago sort of poo-pooed, but it's going to get here in the end. And it's there now. You know, there's a play button, you press play, it plays, and stuff happens in the background, whether it's progressive download or download and play or stream. The hoops that the three of us had to jump through in 2004 and 2005 to get these things set up, and the here's how to listen to a podcast page we all had to write for our websites.
Isn't that gone?
You know, nowadays it's just press play.
Yeah.
And I think that's the main thing. At every stage in this process of making audio, of making video, of making media available from on a many-to-many basis, as opposed to a one-to-many basis that you would have in a traditional broadcast from the 50s and 60s, it's been reducing complexity at every single step of the way. And, you know, you'll know yourself, Todd, the amount of headaches you had with video codecs even 3 years ago. Nowadays, you still need to do some stuff in the background, but for the person watching at home,
right,
they press play.
Thank goodness for HTML5. Woohoo!
Yeah.
Hey. You know,
yeah, I just hope that it becomes a more powerful kind of, you know, technology, the HTML5. You know, they keep adding features to it, I hope. I don't know if you've heard, Todd, is there any movement on that of expanding its capabilities?
There's not. And, you know, they really, you almost kind of like, it's cringeworthy, but the thought process, they didn't have any media creators on the HTML5 standards board when it came to, you know, how players work and what will be available and what you can do. So, you know, a lot of people have been cooking their own as best they can, but, yeah, they could have done a lot a lot better. And of course, you know, YouTube's been trying to figure it out and they've done a pretty good job, but it's still not, you know, from a, it's more tighter on the monetization standpoint than in the interactivity standpoint to try to get the player to this new HTML5 player. Well, not new, but the new standard to do more. And, you know, a lot of times people don't want more, but from a, you know, for those of us sitting on the other side of the fence and paying payroll, you know, we're trying to figure out how to get more out of this thing.
Yeah. Well, I definitely like the new default player that you have in your PowerPress platform. It's definitely better than the one that was before that had just the small little button you had to push.
Yeah. Well, we just got to thank, we got to thank WordPress for that. They're the ones that came up with that.
Oh, okay.
And
So that's the default HTML player for WordPress.
Yeah, it sure is.
I gotcha. Okay.
Now,
we're back to just press play.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
What I'm really excited about is the, of course, we're going to be releasing, I think I showed this already, but we're going to be releasing the ability to have a playlist too. So, and video and audio. And that's baked so that it's will work for podcasters, not just someone that is trying to do a, you know, top 10, you know, these are my songs I love to listen to list, but it's tied to the RSS feed. So I'm excited to have WordPress 6.0 out on the street soon. And every time I say that, Angela emails me and say, don't tell people when we're releasing because I might not be done with it, which is funny.
Todd, did you hear if that will play each of those episodes in sequence?
You know, that was something that I need to re-add to my to-do list. No, I didn't ask him.
Oh, okay, that's fine. I was just curious.
But I'm sure we could probably put a switch in there. But, you know, I hate to do that because, you know, some knucklehead's just going to hit play and then he's going to walk away and come back 2 days later and this thing's going to be in a loop or something, you know. So
that'd be awful for your numbers, wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's definitely not something, yeah.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Another thing that happened in the news, and this is something that, you know, we've been advocating for a while. If you're on FeedBurner, you know, run. Folks over at YouTube killed RSS in YouTube. So it may not, many people maybe didn't even know that existed.
Yeah, but they've been really, really pushing that one down further and further for a long time now. I'm not surprised that it's gone.
So
I mean, Todd, more consistent with what they did with their feed reader, right? Just fewer people are actually getting their news through RSS readers, per se. I think that's the bigger issue there.
Well, one thing's for sure is, shutting down Reader was good for Feedly, because Feedly's now doing very, very well for all of us stalwarts that stayed over there and was using that. You know what, you know, Ewan, what do you think? You know, I don't know if you've used FeedBurner, but do you think what do you think the fate of that's going to be? You know, they haven't touched it in, I don't know, 4 or 5 years now.
You know, there's a reason I haven't used FeedBurner, and it's the same reason as Google Reader. It's the same reason as Dodgeball. It's the same reason as name countless services that you can put in here. And it's simply this. It's my media and I want to be in control of it. If there's going to be a part of the production chain which can break that's not under my control as a media creator, I'm not happy with that. FeedBurner, you know, is it vital? Can you bypass it? Yes. Is it a critical component? For a lot of people it isn't, but for some people it is. For me, And again, this comes back to, it's great having a turnkey solution. It's great having something that you can just pop in and leave. But if something goes wrong, you can't back out of it.
Right.
You can't go wrong. You know, if you're on WordPress.com, for example, and somebody pops along and says, oh, you've got one too many Google Amazon affiliate codes on that page,
yep.
WordPress shuts your account down.
Yep.
And it's just like, no. Oh, yeah, well, you can appeal, but you're not going to get it back again. You know, mm-hmm. That bit's not under my control. It's a critical thing. FeedBurner, you know, the where people sign up to your RSS is a critical component, and you need to not only have it under your control, but be able to switch it out yourself. You know,
yep.
We're assuming Google is going to be around forever. We probably assumed MySpace was going to be around forever. We probably assumed that Gopher SEO was going to be our big ticket for the rest of our lives, making sure that people could find themselves on that, and then stuff happened. And there are now kids all over America going, what is this Gopher you speak of?
Yeah, that's true. I'm going to take a contrary view a little bit. I don't believe that Google is going to shut down FeedBurner, and I think that the big reason for that is that they know that it's critical to the infrastructure of how podcasting works, and a lot of people are really, really dependent on it, and if they do anything, they may turn it into some sort of a paid service. Or and if they do decide to shut it down, I believe that they will try and transition people off of it somehow. So I think that there's a variety of ways that Google could do that. Sure, it's possible that Google could shut it down. I don't think that it takes up much resources for them to just continue operating it. And it is kind of it's kind of a standard. I mean, for a lot of podcasters, and
The numbers are slowly dropping. Yeah, I think right now about 20% of podcasters use FeedBurner. So,
and I think
be like 80%.
Yeah, I mean, I think here over the last couple
that's
of years,
when there was five podcasters.
Right.
Yeah, we've had there's been a pretty proactive campaign that's done by a lot of podcast consultants, and I know we've said it for a long time. Yeah, to transition off of there to other solutions.
Right.
And I think in some ways that could be a self-fulfilling prophecy too. I mean, as that happens, more and more Google's going to see that, and it may be, at some point down the line as people transition, they will shut it down because there's less people using it. So
I think mostly a lot of bloggers use it. I don't think, we've been cautioning podcasters because they've got a lot to lose, yep. Because it's tied to the distribution ecosystem. Yep. And that's one thing, the question has been asked of me, and, I've got a dog in this fight, personally, and from a company standpoint is, okay, so what happens if Raw Voice and Blueberry go out of business? What happened if you guys quit updating PowerPress? And I'm like, the beauty of what we've done and the way we coded this is that, you can unplug PowerPress today and you can continue on doing what you're doing. You may not have as a robust RSS feed, because that's what we do. We make the feed more robust and really add all the iTunes elements. And plus, that code is going to reside somewhere open source. It's open source on that's part of being on the WordPress plugin thing, is you can fork the code if you need. Someone could take up the mantle and fork it if they needed to. But So, it's from our standpoint, if you're using our plugin, I always tell people just unplug it and, continue on with your merry day. You are going to have to do a couple of things, but it's not like you're going to, your main thing is you're still in control. And we've tried to not make these huge, I guess, for better words. Well, we use the database as WordPress does by default. So we don't, you're not going to have to go in and repair a database or something because you've unplugged us. That's unlike PodPress. When they did it, it left just a horrific mess in the database. And I'm sure people still today have PodPress entries that they have no clue that's in their databases from years gone by.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to have to unplug now as well. Family duty calls back here in Edinburgh.
Okay. So thanks for coming and talking about us, about your article. And for those folks that definitely check UNSite out at unspence.com or at UN on Twitter. What about your podcast? What are the actual podcasts they can check you out on then?
Best one would be at the moment that's still current is the Eurovision podcast, which is escinsight.com. And if they all head over to thepodcastcorner.com, the Edinburgh Fringe podcast will be warming up again, and Edinburgh Nights is a weekly chat show from Edinburgh that's back on season now as well.
Oh, very good, and nice seeing you again, and enjoy the, I guess, as you said, gloomy weather. I hope it gets nicer over there.
Oh, no, we're always gloomy. It's summer.
It's a lot like Seattle. It's always like always cloudy, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we just don't have trolls under bridges, though.
I must have gotten lucky when I went to Milton Hall. And it wasn't Milton Hall. Maybe it was. I don't know. Somewhere over there. Oh, he's boom. He's gone.
Or he dropped. One of the two. Yeah. All right.
Interesting. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there is a distinct difference in listening patterns over there. Because, you know, you've got the BBC. You don't have. Hit 100, well, you know, 101.9.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have all, you know, 25 or 30 different competing radio stations in each market.
Well, it's really dominated by the BBC. I mean, that's what everybody listens to. It's a completely different media market, and I thought that's what would be an interesting thing to talk about here is that over there this space is looked at a little bit differently than we look at it, and maybe there's something that we can learn from what's going on over there, that because they always have been a little bit ahead of the U.S. I think in some of things, because the BBC has been so dominant that they could try different things and do things that maybe weren't as easy to do here in the U.S. And I think this blending of radio and podcasting that's going on over there is an interesting thing. And I mean, even the terminology that's being used to describe in the research, you know, the listen again and catch up radio, I just don't hear those terms used here in the U.S.
And another thing, too, is they don't have to, it's not worried about competing, it's not worried about ratings. They can do journalism, they don't have to be politicians. You know, I am basically I'm on a call list with the BBC. I get called maybe once a month, maybe twice a month. It's usually in the middle of the night, and they're like, "Todd, this is BBC Asia." Of course, I'm in Hawaii, so they put me on the Asia call in, and not really call in, but they, you know, if they have a tech issue or something in the podcasting space, or you know, they'll call me. Can you speak about this topic? And I'm rubbing my eyes, getting woke up, you know, and.
Yeah,
and 15 minutes later, I'm on for a 3-minute spot, and you know, so they are, you know, they have this huge library of people that they call, and like I said, I get called maybe once a month or maybe twice a month. So you on our in within our television and radio here, what do you hear? This you see the same exact people every day, and there's this small microorganism of talent that.
Yeah,
shaped what's going on in the world. And the BBC, even though they have a desk person, they are reaching out to lots and lots. So their news method, I think, is, you know, probably we could relearn something here in the United States. But
it's probably more real journalism.
Oh, absolutely.
Too. Yeah. I mean, it's investigative. It's has a world perspective. I think that we here in the U.S. tend to be so kind of...
Oh.
U.S. centric in how we look at things that, I mean, we don't even know what's going on really unless it's some bomb that blows up in Iraq or some killing happens in Syria. That's about the only thing we ever hear about what's happening in other countries around the world.
You know, they have CNN domestic and CNN international. Most people don't even know there's an international division to CNN.
Yeah.
You know, and then
they'll play it on the CNN, channel here on cable, you know, like after hours, like really late at night and stuff like that. When those folks are broadcasting in Europe is kind of in a different time frame.
After they've told us 18 times in 18 different hours, actually they've told us 36 times in 18 different hours, the same exact story.
Yeah.
I could never be a guy on a desk that's just having to regurgitate the same thing every 30 minutes. It just would. That's not a life.
Well, you know, I think that those kind of channels, I think, have a very, don't have a long-term future. I just don't think that cable news in its current form is really what people want anymore. I think it had its heyday and people just don't consume this stuff that way anymore. I think it's all being consumed through social media and links to segments and links to topics, links to leading stories. through social platforms and email and sharing and that kind of stuff. And you know, I'm hearing more and more. I saw some research that came out saying that you know, having a compelling front page to your website is not really needed anymore. I mean, really what you need to have is a highly socially connected site on right. the web that just has deep content on deep pages in your website. And what's on your homepage should just be virtually nothing because nobody's ever going to your homepage anymore.
Well, that's an interesting move. I guess I'm doing a rebuild for nothing then.
I think it, you know, if you think about it from the perspective, it's more important to give people access to content, right? It's not driving people to a particular destination. People find content that they have an interest in that's more often than not now pushed to them, or they've made some sort of a connection with groups of people that have like-minded kind of interests, right? Podcasting kind of fits into this where it's very niche programming, right? People will find us that have an interest in new media, right? It's in our stuff through podcasting tends to get pushed to people if you think about it. So I think podcasting is playing into a trend that's happening more and more. And what needs to happen is podcasting just needs to get even easier to get access to the content and pushed more to people through notifications and through things like that. So if I'm subscribed to a show, I need to be notified when a new episode right. comes out, right? I mean, that's the paradigm of what's happening now. You know, if you think about Twitter and you think about Facebook,
yep.
you know, on our walls, you know, that's how you and I discover news, discover what's happening is following like-minded groups that are sharing things that are breaking or things that are important to me, right? So it's not me going to the homepage of Yahoo or the homepage of CNN and looking through a whole list of stories. People don't have time to do that anymore.
Well, I guess I'm still old school. I do that. I still go, you know, that's I default load a news site when I load the browser and I gander and I move on. But the only time I really go to the television is when there's something big happening. You know, it's some disaster or something has happened. And that's the only time I really flip to the channel. Hey, I want to talk just a little bit, Rob, about a topic that is a little bit troubling. There's so many automated services now that are scanning the web and they're looking for malware. They're looking for something that is not supposed to be on a website, and basically there's a lot of independent entities out there that are doing this. And of course, Chrome and Firefox, and they've all got this baked into their system, and there's a lot of cross reporting. So Chrome doesn't do it all on their own. They work with a group of folks, and we've seen, and actually it's something that we've had experience with, is where one of these sites will falsely flag your site as having malware. And you know, so I think as a user we appreciate those services. It keeps us off sites that are going to infect our computers. But also these sites are wrought with high false readings. In other words, they flag on something they shouldn't flag. Well, okay, so if they flagged on it, okay, what do we do? Do you need to get off a blacklist? And it usually involves getting your credit card out. And or so you basically say, hey, I've fixed, or I think you flagged me falsely. Can you look at my site? And they come back and say, oh, yeah, we'll look at your site in like 96 hours.
So is this because of what happened at PodRack last week?
Yeah, and you know, we had experience with our site having something similar happen. It's probably been a year, and it happened over a weekend, and someone said, hey, I can't download an episode. You know, this, and we're like, the episodes are working, and have this guy send us his screenshot because he had some third-party DNS server. They were flagging one of our URLs as being bad, which basically put us on the naughty list. Well, if we had not got the credit card out and said expedite, we probably been had an issue for a very, very small segment of people for maybe 96 or 100 hours. Well, that's a kiss of death. And so
this mainly happening on the redirect for your stat service?
No, not on, it hasn't happened ever on a redirect. I think we actually, we've got provisions in if something like that would ever happen, but it's happened to PodTrack. It's happened to us. It's happened to a lot of websites, and we never had an issue. There was actually nothing that was on our site, and saying PodTrack has came back and said the same thing. You know, they said the Chrome browser blocked the PodTrack domain, reporting it as malware, followed later by Firefox and so Safari. So they're all tied together. They one starts and it's a chain reaction.
Yep.
He said at the same time, Chrome's diagnostic page said there were no reports of malware for this domain in the last 90 days. And for more than 8 years, we've not seen a browser return the domain as malware. We scanned our servers for malware and found none. We checked with our hosting companies. And they basically say, hey, you're clean. And then sometime between, and they basically, they requested a review from Google. And they got lucky. And someone, sometime between 1 and 7 a.m. Eastern, all of them stopped reporting that there was an issue, and they never had a problem. And I don't know if PodTrack paid for an expedited review. Maybe they did, but there's something funny going on in the space, and we think it's a little bit of a racket.
It definitely sounds like it. I mean, if you're, I mean, so how much do they charge to get,
varies,
out of jail here?
Varies, you know, but the thing is, there's multiple of them. So, you know, one site might be $50 a year. The other site might be $200 a year. The other site might be $10 a year. The other site might be $5. You know, there's not just one, you know, there's multiple, and you have to go and look at each one, make sure that you're not in their list. And if you are, you need to go, you know, write them a check and say, hey, check my site. And they, oh yeah, you're clean. And like, how did you report me in the first place? It's because someone or one site flagged it, and it just chain reaction. You end up on this, you know, on this hit list. And so, I think it's, I don't know if, I don't want to go so far saying it's a scam, but it's definitely, there's something broke. And, you know, something like that can put a company out of business.
Well, the reason I use the word scam is because it sounds like it could be a very slippery slope, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it could be, I mean, if a company starts thinking that they can make big money by putting more and more, sites on blacklists.
Yep.
And these browsers are tapping into multiple companies, keeping black and white lists.
Yep.
That there could be a economic opportunity here,
and you can get taken out by a third party. So I use a couple of ad servers. They're third party companies. I use know a stats tracker, a third party. You know, if any of those sites get flagged, you get sucked up into it because you've got that on your site, and they don't just block a page or block an article. They go to the root. The root domain, and that's done.
Well, it sounds like the same thing that's been happening for years around spam emails. There's blacklists and whitelists for spam email too. It sounds like it's the same kind of thing. I don't believe that you ever had to pay somebody to get on a whitelist.
Oh, you don't have to pay them. You can wait.
Yeah, but how long do you have to wait?
Right.
Your business goes down the tube in the meantime.
Right. You know. So it's, we got lucky that ours was, just one of those providers. And I call it in Hawaii, we got this word Akamai. It's someone that's very tied in. They know, and nothing to do with Akamai hosting, but it's just a Hawaiian thing. Akamai, and it basically, he said, hey, there's a problem. And immediately we got on it it was self-contained, but if I hadn't been at the computer and called Angela and said, hey, we got a major issue. You need to look, come back Monday. This could have spread, everywhere. And, You know, yeah. And you lose trust that the consuming public doesn't know. They have no clue that you're not, you haven't been infested or hacked. So, I feel bad for Mark and his team.
Because, the news that I heard was that PodTrack was spreading malware through some sort of redirects. So it was a completely incorrect kind of, assumption. I thought of a new term to describe this. It's not a scam. It's extortion.
It's extortion. And what was flagging was their players. So they had their players that was on other people's sites. And so people were going and they were loading their own sites and getting this message. And, immediately they're like, oh my God, this third party player is screwing me. So, and we've seen instances where we did an emergency release of PowerPress because we got a message from a security firm saying, hey, this particular player, a very popular player, has an issue. And it wasn't, it was a potential exploit issue. And, So
it's probably a JavaScript based player, right?
To be honest with you, I don't know the technical details, but I called Angela. I said, pull that player. And luckily we've got it modularized where he could just do whatever he did. And, like 15 minutes, I had a brand new release of PowerPress on the street with that player pulled. We made a big announcement why we pulled the player because it was very popular. Mm-hmm. And 3 days later, the player people fixed their player and we were able to reintroduce it and do another release. But when all this stuff is intertied together, it just takes one piece of bad code on someone's part, and you can bring a whole ecosystem down.
Yeah. That's how fragile these systems are. There's a lot of people that would love to think that everything in the tech space is 100% bulletproof and entirely reliable, but my experience over many years is that technology will never be 100% of anything, just because there's just too many points of failure that can happen, and that's the strength of the internet, and it's also its weakness is that it's a distributed thing that has lots of pieces that are dependent on each other. And there's really no room for error, and when an error happens, it's like a domino.
Yeah. And it can end up being really, really bad. So, I didn't write the article on PCN and I kind of cringed when I saw it, but it was already on the street. And, it's one of those situations where, give the guy, 24 hours to try to resolve it, but people that we're going to encounter it, encounter it regardless. And, I'm just like, man, he's not the only one that's had to deal with this issue. And it can be you could be a bug in WordPress. It could be a bug, you just don't know. You really don't.
Well, they're very complex systems. What we've all built here.
Yeah. And hackers have gotten much better, much more complex too.
Do you know off the top of your head what the name of one of the whitelist, blacklist companies that are keeping this?
Angela deals with that. We can probably Google.
It's what?
We can probably Google the list.
Well, I was just wondering. If you were a company, how would you actually find out?
You get an email.
List of all these.
You get what we did is we started looking for them, and it's like kind of a whack-a-mole type thing. And I just told Angela, just pay the subscription fee. I said it sucks, but at least what they will do then is if something hits, you get an email immediately, and that you've got an issue. So what we've had to do is, and something that was really smart on Angela's part from the very beginning, is when we do our syndication and when we syndicate sites into blueberry.com or tech podcast, we strip a lot of crap. It's like we don't allow anyone's weird junk to come into the sites. It's pretty pure. Because if you don't, Now you're not only policing your own website, but you're policing the 20,000 sites that you're syndicating. And so, originally I had fought him on that. I'm like, why? That just reduces the user experience. It's not going to be as good. And he says, we can't do it. We just can't. I'm going to hold the line here. And he made the right decision from that standpoint.
Yeah. Hey, Todd, I also wanted to just mention to folks that are listening or watching this, that we did say on the last show that we were going to have Alan Levy on this week.
Yeah.
Who's the CEO of Blog Talk Radio. And I did talk to him. He had to cancel this week on coming on, but he said he's more than happy to come on at some point in the future. I guess this time of the year, he plays in a lot of golf tournaments, I guess. So it just didn't work out for him to be on the show this week. He's on the East Coast, so it would be, right in the middle of the day. So I'll definitely have him back on, but it may be a few months until he kind of gets through his golf tournament season, I guess, is how it works out. So when he initially committed to come on the show, I'm not sure that he thoroughly understood that it was going to be a midday Saturday thing. So
yeah, and it's a challenge getting people on the weekends. They work hard during the week and they want to have their time off. Last couple of things I've got here is in my little stack, and I don't know if we talked about this last week or not. Did we talk about Major League Baseball last week?
I don't believe so.
So last week, many fan-created podcasts that focus on Major League Baseball disappeared from the iTunes store. It was assumed by many folks that the removal of those fan casts were prompted by takedown requests. A lot of people were pretty upset. And most, if not all, the shows that were removed from iTunes have since been reinstated.
I don't understand why they would remove shows like that. That's interesting.
And it appears that it may have been partly to do with album art.
Album art. Okay.
It may have been a miscommunication between MLB. Now, MLB did send a bunch of requests to Apple. According to the writer, MLB sent a bunch of requests to Apple because MLB felt those casts were infringing on its intellectual property. So basically those shows were hid. They weren't removed. And they need to change their names, artwork, to conform with MLB rules. So so some of them were fan casts that, had the Cubs cast or, Cub fan cast. But even using unofficial Cubs cast wasn't even enough. So some shows had to completely remove the, and here's what the deal is. Major League Baseball aggressively and National Football League and NHL aggressively protect their trademark. And they license that name and those likenesses and those images at multi millions and billions of dollars on TV, radio, memorabilia, and they want to be paid. And if you're not paying them, you're not using the name.
Yeah. Well, that and a lot of fan casts will use the Major League Baseball logos in their cover art, and that kind of implies that's an official Major League Baseball podcast by using that. And a lot of those leagues are actually putting out their own podcasts now.
Yep. So there's some advice here. Podcasters need to be absolutely certain the word unofficial is prominent in the show's title and or description. Make it dead obvious the show isn't a direct product of the team/movie/TV show, whatever other franchise. Second, avoid using trademark artwork, logos, or images unless you know 100% that you're allowed to do so. And have a contact information readily displayed on your website so you can be contacted by a league or a team if they have an issue. A link back to that site from all distribution channels wherever possible. This will make it easier for any connected parties to reach you directly. And we'll see what happens here. But it would shock me. Wake up in the morning and you're gone. You're off the ethernets because you named your show wrong. But, it's something I, and believe it or not, I covered this in my podcasting the do-it-yourself guide. You know, that was a topic that we covered extensively on legal, trademark, and that type of stuff. So it's really a podcast 101 rookie mistake.
Well, and I think as this space becomes more and more monetized and viable and becomes more mainstream, I think these issues are going to keep popping up. You know, I think there's a lot of podcasters that are still using licensed music or unlicensed music in their podcasts too, that at some point could be a problem for them. So there's these little issues that I think as this space has been small for many years in relative terms, to a lot of the big companies that have content, at some point, you know, this space is going to see a spotlight come down on it. And I think we're starting to see that happen. I mean, this is the first time that I've heard of, you know, this kind of action by a major, you know, sports league to go after podcasters. And it may be just the beginning of more of this as it's perceived that this is a successful space and as those other companies want to come into this space and carve out their niche, you know.
So what did you think about the Stitcher announcement?
I didn't actually see a Stitcher announcement. Why don't you share?
They made an announcement that they are making available for $99 a year a app. You can have your own branded app for your show. It's $99 for the podcast, for the Android app, $99 for the iOS app. Basically, you just sign up, give them the money, they'll put it together, they'll put it up on the app store for you, take care of everything you need. I don't know the full details. I don't know if you have to be, let me see if I can bring, oh, no, excuse me, not Stitcher, Spreaker.
Spreaker, okay. Yeah,
excuse me, it's, let me bring this up. So, boom, 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 boom. Boy, I almost blew it here. Yeah, so Spreaker, a customized, dedicated app exclusively for your own show. Android 99, iOS 99. Highlights of it is custom ICU specifications. Listener can catch you live or pre-recorded, interact closely with fans in real time. Keep track of the number of downloads and stats your app attracts. You can choose to publish the app under your account or do it yourself and generate revenue from it. So,
so does it say there if it's possible to syndicate through, let's say, a link from Blueberry or a link from Libsyn, or does it have to be hosted on Spreaker?
That we get to find out.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So, and to be honest with you, Rob, I forget. What is Spreaker's model? They just have a...
Well, Spreaker has been on this show before.
Yeah.
The CEO.
Yep.
Francisco was on, and they have the deal with iHeartRadio.
Right.
So if you put your show on Spreaker, which Spreaker has always had their own app, it's been a mobile first platform, then you can create a audio program through their apps. So it's a creation as well as publishing as well as an aggregator platform. So they're doing kind of like a hybrid of like Blog Talk Radio to mobile first. And it sounds like what they're doing is they're just kind of extending that into apps. So it's kind of a little bit like what Libsyn's been doing, publish and we can get you an app kind of concept.
Rob was not happy. I put this up and he immediately came in and, you know, is like, hey, Libsyn, you can add iOS, Android, Windows Phone and Windows 8 apps that are standalone to your account right now. That's free. Not free. You have to have an account over there paying at a certain level. I said, Rob, we all know you offer apps and yes, you have to be paying customer Libsyn to get this. So, but still $99 for someone that's not on their ecosystem is a pretty good deal.
That's if you can do that, right?
Right.
I don't know that that's what they're doing here though. Does it say on the website?
I'm going to reach out to him and find out exactly what it is. Because if they're syndicating my content, so this might be a good, you know, this actually, you know, boy,
this opens up another can of worms too.
It depends. If they are pre-rolling on the app, that would kind of suck. But if they, you know, if you sign up for Spreaker and then you get on iHeartRadio and then have your own app, that might be a good proposition for some folks. But, you know, I don't know how the execution of this is going to work. There's, the devil's in the details.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been with Spreaker that if you're on Spreaker, you can get an RSS feed. But once you get syndicated over to iHeartRadio, that feed gets dropped. I mean, unless they've changed that.
I've heard they're pulling stuff now, but I don't know.
Pulling what?
Pulling a feed. I heard they're
okay.
Doing
okay. So if it's over on the iHeartRadio stuff, it's still the Spreaker feed is still available.
That I don't know. I don't care about the Spreaker feed. I just want them to get, if they're going to allow me to have an app for $99, just pull my feed and then update the app. You know, that's what I would care about personally. I don't want to have to go over there and publish anything. You know, I don't want to have to go over there and do an extra step to publish my show over there. But because I've already got my, but if they're going to give me an app that's branded for my show that doesn't have a lot of Spreaker, you know, I'm sure there's got to be a tie-in. If there's not, I would be shocked.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Well, Todd, I've been thinking a lot about the whole app first thing, and it does kind of make you wonder if it will become more and more important for a podcaster to have their own app. I'm just curious. I mean, as you think about the future of this...
I think there's a break line, and my thought is once your audience gets to a certain size, you got to have an app. But I don't. I think most small show, the average show, financially, $99 not bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. Sure.
You know, that's a model that can be consumed.
But is it open enough to be flexible to come from various syndication sources?
Yeah.
I'm not sure that would fit into a business model that Spreaker would want.
Well, maybe it's time to have him back on, and talk to him.
Yeah, I can invite him. I saw him actually. He just logged into to Skype just a couple minutes ago. I saw.
Yeah, so maybe we'll have him get him on and talk to him about it and see what we can get an update over there. And So I don't, I also there's a lot more. I think we talked about a little bit on the last show, but. A lot more companies are doing pre-rolls in front of our content too. So,
yeah, that's exactly. I mean, it's usually Stitcher and TuneIn are the two that are doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and it might be good to have the CEO of Swell back on the show at some point too, because I know that they're working on an Android version of their service that's going to come out soon.
Yeah, they actually got a so here's what Spreaker, you wonder why we're getting suppressed on advertising right on their website. Purchase a campaign of your choice starting at $10. Impression costs $2 every 1,000. $2 every 1,000.
Yeah, that's pretty low CPMs. Yeah, but they probably don't have a lot of advertisers right now, so they're playing the whole price game.
And they're actually trying to promote this for the folks that are actually content creators over there. They're wanting you to buy this to promote your.
Yeah.
Wow.
As more people and networks jump into this space, I think there's going to be some various approaches that are going to happen, and I'm not sure there's anything you can really do about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a lot of kind of inventory available, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. Well, we're at about an hour and 14. Did you have anything else in the stack from your side that you wanted to talk about, or
nothing particular? I just I'm just doing a lot of thinking about, you know, this kind of transition that's happening around how people are consuming content now and how it may be impacting podcast consumption. And I still think, and we didn't really talk about this, that I still think consuming the content needs, you know, podcasting and kind of listener experiences need to become even more simplified. And that's one of the reasons why I really like what Swell's doing. It may be a glimpse a little bit of the future. I just think that there needs to be more intelligence and smarts put behind playback experiences in this space to help people kind of get to what their particular interests are. And I think you know, companies like Swell are trying to solve that. And I'm not sure that anybody else is really looking at the space quite like them currently. So I think it's interesting. You know, I know that Stitcher is making some pretty aggressive moves out there, and trying to pioneer some things, you know, in the space as well. You know, they really invested in-car experiences. Yeah. And though I think that there's a faction of the on-demand radio audio podcasting space that is a little bit skeptical of the success of in-car dash experiences.
Well, I think people are needing to wake up. It's where things are going.
But where is the majority of the source information for that going to come from? It's going to come from your phone.
Right.
For most people.
For at least next 10 years.
Yeah. I did hear an announcement, I believe, from AT&T saying that they were working with GM to put 4G connections directly to vehicles.
Yeah.
And I think that it was going to be like a promotional period where it was going to be like $10 a month to get that connection in the car, but the caveat for that is the limitation of you know, total bandwidth that can be used for $10 a month. And if you wanted to get, you know, like a that tied into a family data plan,
right,
which you can get through AT&T, you know, like, you know, I'm on a family data plan with 10 gigs per month. That you can access through all your mobile devices, and I suppose that, you know, you can just add your car to that that plan, and once that happens, then yeah, CarPlay starts to make a little bit more sense.
10 gigs is not enough.
Yeah, well,
I'm on a 10 gig. I use 10 gigs mobile by myself every month.
Yeah, and I think it depends on it. Yeah, well, that's crazy, Todd.
It's just the way, you know, I'm a digital dude. So
yeah. So do you use an iPad that has a 4G connection in it?
MiFi.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I use a MiFi. It goes everywhere I go, and then I tether everything to it.
I gotcha. Yeah. So I think that the people are going to start paying more and more for bandwidth. I'm not necessarily seeing. I mean, are you seeing where bandwidth is actually getting cheaper on the wireless side, or do you think it's going up?
It's
going to go up.
It's not cheap.
Yeah,
I spend $100. I spend $100 a month on wireless.
Yeah,
that's just for data. That's not the phone. It's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and I'm still paying, you know, for 700 minutes of calling, you know, each month, and I barely use any of that.
You're right.
You know?
I use a lot of voice because I use my mobile phone for my business, and when they dial the 800 number, it forwards to my mobile device. You know, so I burn a lot of hours.
Yeah, I was wrong. I'm on an unlimited calling plan now. So that's right. I forgot. So,
you know, one thing that is that we've seen in recent, maybe over the last year, is a lot of people are now, it's part of the changes we're making on some of our sites, is that people are building playlists, and they want to be in control of their playlist. And that seems to be something that is making a resurgence. For a while, they weren't. that we're seeing a lot more people because we're getting requests all the time now to, hey, I want to add this to my playlist. They're not on your network. How do I do it? And we say, oh, sorry, we can't right now, but we're going to make provisions for them here shortly. So,
so when you talk about playlists, are you talking about listeners creating playlists, or are you talking about podcasters
listeners making playlists?
I gotcha. Yeah, I mean, that's what the whole principle that Stitcher was on for their whole platform concept. And that's also at the core of what Swell's trying to accomplish, too, is creating smart playlists.
Yeah, it's user-generated, but we're not doing anything in discovery. You know, that's one thing that Swell's doing is they're trying to help you with discovery.
Yeah, so. It's kind of a, learn from what the user is doing while they're doing it, and then being able to refine that. It's kind of like, really good analogy is voice recognition software, right? Where it learns from what you do and how you speak, and then it gets better and better and better and better.
But
and
I think a lot of those things have a tendency to run home to mama. So what I mean by that is if I choose 5 tech shows and none of them are, let's say, from Twit, it has a tendency to say, oh, you should be listening to Twit. And just because Twit's on a higher on the popularity curve, and I'm like, no, I want to listen to this and this. It seems like they never suggest, the same 10 or 15 shows always show up. It doesn't give me any more depth. And that's the challenge that they need to work out.
I haven't gotten the impression that that how Swell is doing it is based on popularity necessarily. I think
that sucker runs home to mama a lot.
Does it? Does it? Yeah. Okay.
At least that's what I like to say.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's. I can see where that could happen because people are probably more likely to share certain shows,
right?
And from a social perspective, that probably reflects its popularity. I can see how that could happen in that kind of smart playlist kind of scenario. Yeah. And I agree with you. It there needs to be some other factor that is used to suggest shows that isn't as linked up with popularity, though. It feels like the popularity needs to be factored in there, though.
Well, it does.
I mean, isn't that a reflection of quality?
I would think so.
Yeah.
But, for the most part, I don't know. I'm trying to listen to a lot of new shows now. There's an incredible assortment of new podcasts out there. They're not even known. People don't even know about them.
Yeah. And it's coming from overseas and
everywhere.
I mean, I think that this space is just kind of it's exploding right now. It's just, and it's kind of scary too, because it's like, is there a danger that this whole space is kind of in a bubble right now?
Well, it's fine with me. Let's hope the bubble keeps going up, but at some point the bubble will pop.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think what it is maybe people have finally caught up.
Yeah. I'm still worried that there's the content side is just growing and expanding so fast, but is audience levels growing at the same rate? And that's the part that makes me a little nervous, is the audience growing at the same rate that content creation is happening? Because if it isn't, that means that as the number of shows grows, the number of listeners to each show gets smaller on an average.
That's
right.
True. That's true.
So somehow we need to grow, and I keep saying this, I know, on the show. So somehow there needs to be some effort to try and get more listeners overall into the space. And I don't know that there's any way of doing that.
Listeners need to be telling listeners. Listeners need to be telling their friends.
Telling people that aren't listening to podcasts, and exposing them.
I always tell my audience. I always tell them on every show, you need to tell your friends, family members, people you know. Share this show with, send them a link and get them on so that they can listen as well. We're just about there.
Yeah, we are.
Time-wise. Yeah. And it was great having Ewan on and talking with him at the beginning of the show. But it's a beautiful day here in Hawaii. I mean, absolutely gorgeous. I think by the end of the day, I'm going to have a green thumb, whether I like it or not, because I saw my honey-do list, and it involved trimming some trees, mowing some grass, cutting back the shrubbery.
Wow, you got a busy day in front of you.
Yeah. You know, it was I used to have a yard guy that came and did my yard once a month. Yeah. But she fired the yard guy. Well, actually, the first yard guy.
You're the yard guy now, right? Yeah,
so she actually, the first yard guy died. He was fantastic, and it was sad. He really did. He died. And then the second yard guy wasn't that good of a yard guy, so she fired him. So now me and my son are the yard guys again. So
well, that's not exactly a great track record, Todd. Did, you know, either fired or died.
The first guy, he was fantastic. He was an older guy. He was a Filipino guy, and fantastic. He was just, I mean, the man loved his work, and he was a perfectionist, and it's hard to find people that love their job.
Yeah.
You know, when you find people that love their job and love what they do, it's they are artistes, you know? Yes. So
that's what podcasters are, is they're artistes.
Yeah. And some more than others.
Yes. Yes. So
All right,
it was great. Yeah, I don't have any guests to announce for next week yet, so we'll just it'll be a surprise.
All right, and folks, you can email us here, Todd or Rob at newmediashow.com. I know we've had some comments come in over the last couple of weeks. We're starting to see more emails, so we appreciate that. And tell us who you want to see on the show. Give us some advice as well, because sometimes we're digging for guests. So
is there any news on the big remodel of the site?
You know, I thought we were going to have something to test this weekend, but Angelo is in Michigan with family, and so this weekend's out the window. So I'm hoping soon.
Yeah.
Why did you tell him when? It's been literally nuts. I mean, it's a good kind of nuts, you know, but it's been nuts. And I start doing interviews next week for a new hire. So that, hopefully that will help as well. So anyway, let's get out of here. Everyone, thanks for being here. We'll see you next time. Everyone take care. Aloha. Okay. Thanks for being on. Bye-bye.